So let's see, we're starting off with Courtney Murphy, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then you have it for 12 minutes, and then Cesar Serrano for 3 minutes, is that right? Very well. What are you going to do in terms of, you're doing the rebuttal, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, very well. All right. You all set over there, counsel, for the government? Okay, very well. All right, Ms. Murphy, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. I am Courtney Murphy, certified law student representing petitioner Julius Joaquim Ohumole. And I see that the clock has been set to reflect my 12 minutes. Thank you. Your Honors, this case turns on the BIA's abuse of discretion in denying Mr. Ohumole's motion to reconsider his CAT claim. This court has made clear that a denial of reconsideration constitutes abuse of discretion when the BIA fails to correct material legal errors. And here, the BIA failed to address three such errors in the immigration judge's denial of Mr. Ohumole's CAT claim. First, the IJ failed to conduct the appropriate aggregate analysis required by Velazquez-Samoya by improperly merging Mr. Ohumole's two distinct theories of torture from multiple sources into one single hypothetical chain of events. Second, the IJ misapplied the court's precedent for what is required for a showing of particularized threat of torture, and in doing so, overlooked highly probative evidence pointing to Mr. Ohumole's particular risk as a member of two particular social groups that face widespread and targeted violence in Nigeria. And third, the IJ misapplied the court's precedent and the CAT regulations for showing government acquiescence, thus overlooking and mischaracterizing critical evidence of Nigerian government's involvement in and acquiescence for willful blindness to torture.
Counsel, can we, at least for my purposes, I would appreciate your focusing on the last one. Let's just say, arguendo, that we agree with you about the first two, okay?
Okay.
But if the IJ erred there and you don't show on a CAT claim that the government either conducts or acquiesced in torture, mm-hmm. you lose, right?
True.
Okay. Please convince us why the petitioner in this case satisfied that burden.
Absolutely. So the legal error that was committed by the IJ was that first, the agency overlooked and mischaracterized evidence of state acquiescence. Nigerian authorities not only tolerate but also facilitate violence against LGBTQIA persons and Christians.
Forgive me, you're talking about from country conditions, that's what you're talking about?
Yes.
As opposed to anything that happened to him.
As opposed to anything that happened to him, although if you're referring to any past harm that he may have
yes.
experienced, yes. We actually disagree with how that is stated in the record. Mr. Ohumole, on no less than four occasions during his hearing with the immigration judge, said yes when asked if he had suffered harm in Nigeria, and there seemed to have been some...
I understand that. What I'm looking for here,
mm-hmm.
I hope you can help me,
I see,
is something from him
mm-hmm.
wherein he testified or had other evidence that showed that the Nigerian government directly was involved in his torture or acquiesced in it having occurred by private actors. What evidence was that introduced to that effect?
In the past or in the future?
The past.
In the past. So the evidence that he was trying to relay about the harm he experienced as a 9-year-old boy in a federal government college when witnessing a fellow student who was seen exhibiting gay behavior was beaten mercilessly. And again, as a
The other student was beaten mercilessly. Not him.
Not him.
Okay.
But again, under the definition of torture for CAT, it's any severe pain or suffering, whether physical or mental.
To the petitioner. But in this case, as I understand correctly, what you're talking about, the record shows that he observed that another person who exhibited gay behavior was mm-hmm. tortured.
Right.
But that he personally was not. Are you suggesting that having seen that satisfies the requirement that the government of Nigeria, acquiesced in his torture?
I would argue that Yes, the witnessing, especially of a 9-year-old child to this sort of behavior, you know, directed at someone who shares characteristics which are fundamental to his own identity, mm-hmm. could constitute that. I know that in the asylum context, age is taken into account when it comes to persecution. So,
do you have any case law that would substantiate your position?
Not with respect to CAT claims that I'm aware of, Your Honor, but I'd be happy to find supplemental briefing. We just wanted the court to be aware that he was trying to explain in his testimony.
Let's assume for a moment that he had so testified, but if I understand your position correctly, you don't have any case law that would substantiate the fact that he observed that another 9-year-old was brutally beaten for gay behavior, but he himself didn't have that occur, and that that constituted government acquiescence in or causing torture.
I don't, but I would point out that past torture is not necessary to satisfy the CAT burden, and we could look towards the probability.
It's a higher burden.
It's a higher burden, yes. But the record we feel is replete with evidence to meet that higher burden, and it simply was not pointed out by the immigration judge in her analysis. Again, in the record, I can direct the court to the IJ addresses the fact that, excuse me here, on page 176 of her opinion, she seems to dismiss that there's any government acquiescence because torture is prohibited by the Constitution. And of course, in Cole v. Holder, that is not enough to dispel the notion that torture occurs. And then, yet she seems to neglect that in the very next paragraph from where she would have gotten that, on page 415 of the record, that the committee charged with overseeing laws prohibiting torture is unable to carry out its work effectively due to lack of legal and operational independence. 2 pages later, that impunity, exacerbated by corruption and a weak judiciary, remain a significant problem in Nigeria. And then further, pages 418 through 419, prison guards reportedly extorted inmates, including for sex, which would constitute rape and torture.
Let me just ask this. As you might imagine, in a court that gets lots of appeals in
yes.
immigration cases, a lot of folks would like to use country reports. For example, in Mexico, we get lots and lots and lots of cases in Mexico that deal with LGBTQ issues, sexism issues, discrimination against people based on their native heritage and the like. We don't rule in favor of the government acquiescence or actual torture unless it's focused on that person, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that in Nigeria there is discrimination against LGBTQ people is tragic. But you have to bring it down to the petitioner in this case. And what I'm struggling with is, where is that done? I don't see that in the record. What am I missing?
Well, I would point the court to Zoshiwa Jaimez and Parada v. Sessions, where they explain that such widespread corruption of public officials is highly probative to the question of acquiescence. And I would also argue that, again, I think the first legal error that we wanted to discuss today, by virtue of the IJ's failing to conduct the appropriate aggregate analysis, I think what happened there was that the government acquiescence claim wasn't properly adjudicated in the first instance. And this is why we're requesting remand for the appropriate aggregate analysis to be conducted, taking account of particularized risk and acquiescence.
And what do you make, though, of the fact the IJ stated, and I quote, assessed all factors regarding the likelihood of future torture to your client and considered them in the aggregate? That's
yes.
what the IJ said, right?
It is what she said, Your Honor. However, if we look to page 176 of the record, this is where she commits the absolute incorrect analysis under Velazquez-Samayoa. So in that case, when an applicant proffers multiple theories of torture, and which is our case here, from various sources as well, the hypothetical chain of events analysis cited in the rule of JFF is of little practical help. And the IJ specifically does this incorrectly. She states on page 176, respondent's fear of future torture relies on a chain of suppositions. Respondent has not shown how the authorities would even know that he's in Nigeria, that he was bisexual, what his religion is, so combining those two, that they would seek him out and then torture him. Respondent must establish that each step in the hypothetical chain of events leading to his torture is more likely than not to occur. That is not the law. Under Velazquez-Semoya, when multiple theories are offered, each theory from each source needs to be independently assessed. And then once that's done, they need to be aggregated to determine whether or not the applicant has met that burden of...
Right, well, between what you quote and I quoted, wasn't that done here? I mean, they were considered individually, and then it says even in the aggregate, he doesn't meet the test.
Well, unfortunately, because she merged those two in on page 176, and she also does it throughout the rest of the opinion, on the bottom of 175 and 176, she's consistently merging the two claims about his LGBTQIA status and his Christian identity.
That considering them in the aggregate?
Unfortunately, no, because those are two distinct theories. And again, under Velazquez-Semoya, they need to be assessed independently and from the sources that could inflict them.
So is your claim, the IJ didn't use the word chains like plural, or is it that the IJ needed to have two paragraphs? I'm trying to, because in like a lot of these decisions, it's, mm-hmm. you know, they could always say more, they could have, but I struggled a little bit as to this theory that the IJ multiple times says that it considered this in the aggregate. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out what the IJ could have. Like, your theory, I guess, is that the IJ is saying, how much would he be persecuted or tortured, I guess tortured here, as a bisexual or gay Christian, like putting them together?
Yes, exactly.
But that's a little non-intuitive. Like, when I think of, like, I'm trying to think, what is your risk of torture as a gay Christian, but only as a gay Christian, not as a Christian, not as a gay person, right? And especially in Nigeria, where your risk of torture for each of those categories kind of comes from a different... I'm not aware of even the country conditions report saying anything about this is the risk of torture for gay Christians, like that particular group of... Because it's a bit of a unicorn, I'm assuming, in Nigeria. So I struggle to think that what actually happened here was that the IJ was really focused on bisexual Christians or gay Christians, that risk, as opposed to an independent mm-hmm. risk of torture because he's bisexual, and an independent risk of torture. And you understand my I understand it. The IJ just said the word chain, mm-hmm. but I mean, could say use the same word. I mean, earlier I think in your argument you mentioned that he is gay and that he was Christian, but I didn't take it that you were necessarily merging those two things.
Exactly. Thank you, Hunter. And I see that my time is up. May I continue?
Just finish answering his question, and then we'll let you go.
So I think the problem is that the IJ did merge those two together. She merged them in the quote that I read that, you know, they won't find out, or how are they going to find out that he was bisexual, what his religion is. But again, Velazquez-Semoya made it very clear that multiple theories need to be assessed independently and then aggregated, added together to see if that 50% threshold has been met. And that was not done. And so just...
It's not so much that you're resting on the word chain versus change. You think there should have been more discussion...
Independent.
...that said, okay, this is his risk as a bisexual. This is a separate paragraph. This is his risk as a Christian.
Yes.
This is his risk as a person who's both bisexual and a Christian.
And this is his risk from public mob, from police, from military, from Boko Haram. Yes.
You just wanted more. Okay.
Yes.
Other questions by my colleague? Thank you very
Thank
much,
you,
counsel.
Honor.
Very well, let's hear from the government. Is it Zaidi, is that correct?
Zaidi,
okay.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Imran Zaidi for the respondent.
This appeal concerns a motion to reopen and reconsider alleging a few different claims, but the primary challenge here relates to cat protection, and that's what I plan to focus on today, subject, of course, to this panel's questions. Now, the standard of review here is abuse of discretion, and the board here acted well within its broad discretion in denying reconsideration for cat protection, where there was no legal or factual error in the agency's prior decisions denying such protection. Instead, in both those decisions by the immigration judge and the board, the agency made the simple and correct conclusion that petitioner simply didn't meet the demanding standard that he faces a likelihood of torture in Nigeria by or with the government's acquiescence. Now, let me highlight just a few key aspects of the agency's decisions, and of course, along the way, I'm happy to answer any of this panel's questions. I think one of the sort of most important points here, and Judge Smith, you were getting to it just now, and answering when asking my friend questions, is the particularized threat. It's black letter law, this court and others, that to establish eligibility for cat protection, you need to show a particularized threat of torture. It's very hard to do that when you don't allege any sort of claims or present any evidence that are specific to the applicant. And that was the case here. Petitioner did not allege that he himself was ever harmed or threatened in Nigeria before he left the country more than 20 years ago in 2003. He does not allege that he himself presented any evidence suggesting that he himself has any ongoing threat, that anyone's even aware of his presence in Nigeria. He instead relies generally on background evidence and country reports relating to the two groups upon which he claims he'll be targeted, one being Christian and the other being the LGBT community as a professed bisexual. Now, it's very hard, based on country conditions evidence alone, to meet that demanding standard and to show a particularized threat of saying that you'll face the likelihood of torture. And I think the cases that petitioner themselves rely on underscore this point. Now, you had asked, and Judge Smith, you'd mentioned that this panel and this court sees several cases arising from Mexico in particular. Well, and petitioner brings up the case that they rely on in their briefing, Xochiwa Jaimez, and there is another case, Amendano Hernandez. Those both as examples of where, perhaps based on background reports alone, you might establish eligibility for cat protection. But those, in fact, underscore why the board here is right and the government's position, because those cases had substantial particularized evidence. So in Xochiwa Jaimez, the petitioner herself had been raped multiple times as a child on account of her lesbian identity. And there was two separate theories. So there was particularized evidence based on both. One was targeted as a member of the LGBT community. She had been raped multiple times as a lesbian. Separately, she was targeted because she had reported a Los Zetas gang member to the police, and that gang member was then imprisoned. And as a result, the Los Zetas gang had targeted her at gunpoint with death threats. So you had two separate sources of particularized threats. And that's a large part of what the court relied on there in remanding for further analysis with respect to CAT. So you had not only particularized evidence, but substantial particularized evidence there. The other case was Amendano Hernandez, somewhat similar in the sense that there was two different theories of harm there. One was, again, based on lesbian, LGBT community background. There, again, the petitioner had been raped, beaten, forced to perform oral sex, severely beaten, and the court made a finding, a specific finding of past torture there, and said when you have that finding, it is the principal factor in the CAT analysis, and then turned to country conditions evidence and said that also supported it. So these, again, are cases that we are not submitting to the court. These are the cases that petitioner is relied on to say that their evidence here is similar. But they don't have any type of particularized evidence. They just rely generally on country reports. I'll say that I think the balance of petitioner challenges here relate to sort of a weight of the evidence, the types of things I'm talking about, how much the evidence generally suggests that they will face a likelihood of torture. So I'll just address two of the sort of specific legal claims the petitioner raised here, one relating to the aggregate risk. Judge Gilman, as you pointed out, I don't know what you can say beyond having the agency decision maker, and in this case both, not just the immigration judge, but both the immigration judge and the board, identified both the separate harm, sources of harm, as a Christian and as a member of the LGBT community, and then both decision makers said, we have considered the aggregate risk and found that it does not meet the standard for cat protection. So I don't think there's much to the aggregate risk point here.
Well, we could say, I mean, I think, as I understand from my colloquy with her at the very end there, I guess if we were going to say something that they could win on, it would be that sort of a tick off the factors type thing. If you were here at the earlier argument, that you have to go through in this case their risk as a Christian, and then you go through their risk LGBTQ, and then you explicitly have a third paragraph say that instead of kind of putting it all together here, and then also and then saying you did the aggregate. And I guess your argument is that we don't need to, that there's not that procedural requirement that the IJ necessarily break it out that way?
So a couple responses to that, Judge Van Dyke. I don't think petitioner actually wants that here. And let me be clear about why. First, they didn't raise this sort of, there's two parts to the aggregate risk argument as I understand what they're saying. One, in their opening brief, they described just generally that the agency didn't consider the aggregate. And that's the point that I just raised and with Judge Gilman and said the agency very explicitly did consider that. Then in the reply brief, petitioner raises this point that in that sort of chain link analysis that the immigration judge lays out, that petitioner or that the agency should have separately considered the two and then maybe had the separate paragraph that you're talking about. I think to actually properly aggregate, you consider the separate risks. You have to understand the sort of, you're going to quantify them, what they would add up to. But then you do consider them together. So to be very clear, if you were to do the chain link analysis, and the sort of black letter law there is matter of JFF and this court's decisions in Andrade and Velasquez-Samoa, each of those links that you would be identified based on this, you would be targeted, you would be tortured, and that the government would acquiesce in that torture, and that if any one of those links is 50% or less, then you don't meet the standard. You need those to be considered together for that math to work out in your favor. If you do two separate chains, and in each of those chains, yeah, say that 50% or less.
So that's why I think what they're actually saying is it's an odd, because not the normal argument we get on that you didn't aggregate, because they actually list them together, the IJ lists them together. Usually the argument that they didn't aggregate is they didn't mention that they aggregated, the agency didn't, and the agency just had an analysis for different things, but never sort of mentioned them together at the end and said they were aggregating. That's our normal, as I understand, you know, is what I've seen. And then the argument is they didn't aggregate and they didn't consider it an aggregate. Here, they list them together, so the argument has to be, well, you aggregated, you put them together, but what you did is, let's say there was A, B, and C were the three different things you could be, right, you could be tortured on the basis of. You considered whether your risk of being tortured as an A plus B plus C, like you, all those things, but you didn't add your risk of A alone, your risk of B alone, your risk of C alone, plus, I suppose, your risk of your A plus B, plus your B plus C, plus your A plus B plus C. You didn't add all of that together in order to figure out the aggregate risk. And that's their argument, which isn't a bit of an odd argument because they're acknowledging in a sense that the judge did aggregate, but didn't aggregate. It only considered when they were put together. It didn't take the individual risks and then add them together. That seems to be their argument.
Judge Van Dyke, I'm not sure that's how I understood their argument, at least. And I don't know that you would. I do know that you actually shouldn't consider the risk of both at the same time. The example you raised of being a gay Christian, the math gets very complicated here. Because this is why I'm saying it really does need to be one chain to be in their interest and to do a proper aggregation. Because what it would be is, would you be identified as someone who is gay or a Christian? Would you be then targeted as someone who's gay or a Christian? Would you be tortured as someone who's gay or a Christian? And then government acquiescence based on either of those factors. To do the chain link analysis, I think properly, and I think in the way that would help them the most, is one chain link, and at each of those clauses, you have targeted based on this or that. And what I understand their argument in their reply brief to be is that they had put targeted based on Christian, comma, targeted based on being gay as a separate clause, and that those should have been together. And that's what they said about in the government's response brief. We said or, as if we were sort of trying to rehabilitate that analysis. And to that, I just say...
I kind of understood it the other way, that they were saying that they needed that wasn't done, that instead they were only considered the petitioner here as a gay Christian, that that was the one chain, and that
they combined.
They didn't combine the separate risk for me.
Right.
And that's why I was asking earlier. It does seem odd that that a judge would be looking only at were they a gay Christian as opposed what are their risks as a Christian and what are their risks as a LGBTQ person.
Well, let's take that argument of judgment. And again, I don't think that's not how I was understanding it, but I think that's the argument that's most clearly refuted by the record, because that's the argument that when you look through the immigration judge analysis, it's very clear that the immigration judge focused on, in a separate paragraph, the evidence relating to Christians, and then later on.
Yeah, there's just nothing in the record. There's nothing in the of this myopic focus on somebody's status as a gay Christian as one sort of unit without. Right. That was what I was kind of getting at earlier. So I understood, I suppose, that you could read this passage that they're pointing to on page 9 of the IJ's opinion that way, but it seems to be a bit of an odd reading to be in context, let's say.
Exactly. And I think it's not only odd in context. I think in just general, when you have
do you read page 9, what I'm saying, on 176, which is where they say, respondent has not shown how the authorities would even know that he's in Nigeria, comma, that he was bisexual, comma, what his religion is, comma, and that they would seek him out and torture him. So are you reading it as kind of having an or between bisexual and religion there, or as an and that puts it together?
That is exactly how I'm reading it. Let me pull it up. I think you might be talking about the PDF number, potentially, not the record number, because I don't have a 176.
I'm on 176 of the AR 176, but maybe just a different page.
Let me see here. Oh, what actually page number of the immigration judge's decision? In its own numbering, is it?
This is, I think, the passage that
gotcha, page
counsel
9,
was referring to.
Gotcha.
And was referred to in the brief.
Know that he's in Nigeria, that he's bisexual, his religion. So it's exactly that line. Would even know that he's in Nigeria, that he was bisexual, comma, what his religion is. As I'm understanding petitioner's argument, it's that those were improperly separated. And
no, I think they're nodding their head, the other, or they're shaking their head. So I think they're saying
they
were improperly merged, and they was only looked at as a bisexual Christian and not as a bisexual person or as a Christian and then aggregated.
I mean, that's what they're saying now. That's the opposite of what they're saying in their opening brief. So I don't understand this, nor do I understand any of the immigration judge or board's analysis to have only looked at the risk of somebody who is both a gay and a Christian at the same time, both gay and a Christian at the same time. And again, I think that's refuted by everything else that the immigration judge and the board said in their actual analysis of the claim, which was to look at country conditions evidence for the Christian community separately, and then for the LGBT community separately, and then to aggregate that risk.
One of the struggles I just have in these cases, and this is not even necessarily limited to the immigration context, but you know, we have these tests that require you to look at the totality of the circumstances. And so because we have these tests, typically lower courts or agencies will do their analysis, most of the time kind of individual issue by issue, and then they'll say, and I don't think the totality of the circumstances is different. And sometimes we criticize them as, and it definitely the opposing party almost always criticizes, so that's not enough. But what more can they do? Because I'm always trying to think, like, if I was in their situation, what more can you do to make it clear that you are adding the risk of this plus the risk of that? Because it does feel like you're asking them to add apples and oranges sometimes. And so how to show that work is, I've struggled with how do we evaluate whether they've shown their work. I mean, they usually say it like they did here, but the criticism is they didn't show their work.
Your Honor, respectfully, I think they said it here and they showed their work. Again, I think what they're really focusing on now is that sort of chain link language in the board, in this court.
I mean,
never
the real way
to
show their work would be to say there's a 13% chance of being tortured based on being a Christian, and there's a 7% chance, or 20% chance based on being gay, and there's a 4% chance of being a gay Christian. Mm-hmm. So we're going to add all those numbers together, but I think a mathematician might tell you that you can't just add them to figure out what the aggregate risk is, and that's less than 50%. I mean, that would feel very weird and artificial.
And I don't think it's ever been required, and I don't want to get into that math because it's actually not technically adding it, and we've resisted that before from this panel. If it's non-mutually exclusive risks, which it would be here, you actually add them and then you subtract the risk of being both a gay and a Christian so that you're not double counting anything. Yeah. I don't ever expect to find that in a board decision or this court's decision, but let me quickly answer your question by just saying what I don't think it's too hard to set a standard for what the board needs to do there, and that's to have analyzed the risks of these two separate things, being Christian, being LGBT, and then truly totaling the risk. And what this court has said, because this has addressed this multiple times when you have multiple theories of harm, and it has said if you've analyzed the risks, the separate risks, and then consider them in the aggregate, in Andrade, this court specifically said the IJ considered it explicitly in the aggregate. The board did not there. And the court said that's enough in that case because the IJ said it, the board did not, but it is clear that they're considering the separate risks and then totaling them all together. Here you have both.
I see you're over, but let me ask. I have one question on a slightly different topic on the LGBTQ, that Nigeria has laws prohibiting same-sex marriage and displays of affection and, you know, association with LGBTQ groups is punishable up to 14 years of imprisonment, right? So, and sometimes these prison conditions, the country conditions reports say, are life-threatening. So why isn't that alone evidence that he would be tortured if returned to Nigeria?
Your Honor, I think a law like that without question shows a country basically institutionalizing discrimination. There's no question. But then to link that to the prison conditions and then to say that those two things together show that this person will face a likelihood of torture is, I think, a jump way too far. I think that law, again, clearly discriminates against a population, but just criminalizing gay sex unions, I don't think suggests or establishes or compels the conclusion, which is the question for this court, that petition would face a likelihood in Nigeria.
Not just gay sex, marriages, it's displays of affection and association.
That's right, and support of marriage. There's no question, Your Honor. And this, I think, a bit gets back to the question and the call he was having with Judge Smith about when you're relying purely on country conditions evidence. There are awful things that countries and governments have participated in, but to show that somebody faces a likelihood of torture by or with the government's acquiescence based just on those country evidence is a very, very difficult thing.
It has to be particularized.
It has to be particularized, yes.
Other questions by my colleagues? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Serrano, please, your rebuttal.
May it please the court, and good morning, Your Honors. My name is Cesar Serrano, and I'm the other certified law student appearing on behalf of Mr. Omolle. Your Honors, one thing is perfectly clear. The adjudication of Mr. Omolle's CAT claim contains legal error.
Contains
legal error.
Okay.
Neither the IJ nor the BIA independently assessed Mr. Omolle's risk of torture from multiple sources based on his sexual orientation. They did not assess Mr. Omolle's risk of torture based on his religious identity. And they certainly did not consider that risk collectively.
Okay, let's assume you're 100% right. We still get back to the issue of government torture or acquiescence in torture. So those other two errors, if they are arguably harmless if your client has not proven government involvement with torture. Is there any particularized evidence that was presented in this case that showed that the government of Nigeria has either tortured your client in the past or would do so in the future?
Your Honor, my answer has 2 points. The first being that, to clarify what we're looking for, we're not asking to relitigate the issues here. We're simply asking that this panel grant the petition and remand his CAT claim to the BIA for reconsideration so that they can do the proper analysis.
I understand that, but you get to do that if you can show that at least arguendo, if it were presented properly, you would have a chance of winning. But if you've not shown the third element, in this case the governmental acquiescence, we don't send those cases back. So that's what I'm looking for. What can you give us that would give us some basis for returning that?
Your Honor, and then, of course, the second point of that is, first, there is government acquiescence in terms of the affirmative persecution by law. The panel mentioned the 2014 law that was passed by Nigeria. And so this actually indicates the government's position when it comes to LGBTQIA+ persons. There is evidence in the record that shows that people who are identified as gay have had to endure forms of lynchings or pillory with tires, okay, set on fire and burnt alive.
With respect, you're talking about country conditions, and as we have had this colloquy, what you need to show is a particularized threat to your client.
Yes, Your Honor.
The laws are awful. What's happened is awful, but you have to show that your client was targeted, and I'm not seeing that in the record. What am I missing?
Your Honor, yes. So the first point brought up by my colleague was the consistent beating of a classmate merely perceived to be gay. The second part of that is that he also credibly recounted a time when he was at the meat market in a Muslim settlement and a Christian man was stabbed. And so these are things
not
that...
Not him, but somebody else.
Yes, Your Honor. And that, for someone who is growing up in that environment, who identifies as LGBTQIA+, or as a Christian, is something that is pretty probative of whether or not they're going to face harm in the future as well. And as I mentioned, there is this widespread violence against LGBTQIA+ okay, people.
Your time is up. Let me ask my colleague whether either has additional questions. I think not. We thank the certified law students. We really, really appreciate your being here. We respect your work and respect what you're doing. We hope this hasn't been too grueling an experience for you. As you know, as lawyers, we can't tell you which result's going to be, but you've done an excellent job. We congratulate you and thank you for coming.
Thank
the
you.
Case just argued is submitted. It's a pleasure. Please bring them back again. The case just argued is submitted, and the court stands adjourned for the day.
All rise. This court for this session stands adjourned.